Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Sadly, Oregon's historic heat wave earlier this week was more than record-breaking. It was also deadly, with a statewide death toll of 81 as of Friday and still climbing. The lion's share of casualties investigators have linked to the three-day heat wave have been reported in Multnomah, Oregon's largest and most densely populated county. But at least 10 heat-related deaths, slightly more than 10% of the state's total, occurred in Clackamas County, according to updated numbers from the County Medical Examiner late Friday. Like the victims of the heat wave in general, those whose deaths were linked to excessive heat in Clackamas County were generally older, ranging in age from a 55-year-old man to a 90-year-old woman. The county's death toll included 6 men and 4 women, according to the Clackamas County Medical Examiner's Office. 9 of the people who died were in their homes, which either had no air conditioning or air conditioners that were not functioning, the county said. One individual was living in their vehicle, which had no air conditioning. Authorities have not yet shared the names or communities of residents for those who perished, citing the need to contact next of kin. Due to toxicology and other reports, and an understanding of the individual's medical and social history, investigations will not be final for 12 or more weeks. In other areas, many of those who succumbed to the heat were found alone in their homes, without air conditioners or fans. Others were elderly and more vulnerable. Still, others were at work, like an immigrant farm worker who was found in a field unresponsive at the end of his shift at Ernest Nursery and Farms in St. Paul this weekend. No single type of weather event kills more Americans than extreme heat, which is more deadly than hurricanes and floods combined. Heat has twice the death toll of tornadoes and 4 times the death toll of extreme cold, according to National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Late June is normally one of the best and busiest times of the year for Willamette Valley caneberry producers, which means the scorching heat wave of earlier this week couldn't have come at a worse time. It doesn't look good, Tisa Martyshev of South Barlow Berries said in a grim Facebook video Tuesday. One day after temperatures in Canby rose to at least 114 degrees, with some reports well over 120. Look at that. It's just, words can't describe what we're seeing, folks. Martyshev shared several videos during and in the intimate aftermath of the historic event, showcasing photos and videos of withered vines, curled leaves, and shriveled raspberries, blackberries, and marionberries. In one clip, she compared what a Veritel called the Columbia Star thornless blackberry normally looks like this time of year. Unfortunately, with the extreme heat conditions, this is what they're turning into, she said on camera. Rows and rows of just sunburnt, dried out Columbia Star. The extreme conditions cost the family-owned berry operation 80% of the season's crop, the Martyshevs told Canby Current Friday. After a difficult year in 2020 due to the pandemic, this blow has put the farm's financial situation in jeopardy. South Barlow has already laid off half its seasonal worker force of 16. The one silver lining is that some portion of the east-facing berry vines appear to be salvageable, Tisa Martyshov said. And the farm is offering U-pick hours for those who are interested. Owned by Tony and Zina Martyshov and run by them and their 8 children, South Barlow Berries is one of the area's most popular U-pick berry farms and farm stands, and is a fixture at the Canby Farmers Market most Sundays. South Barlow Berries is located 4 miles south of Canby on South Barlow Road. The absurd temperatures in Canby between Saturday, June 26th and Monday, June 28th, reaching brutal highs of at least 115 degrees Fahrenheit, seemed more appropriate for the Mojave Desert or Death Valley in California than the normally temperate climes of the agriculturally rich Willamette Valley. It was, in short, lethally hot, as the climbing death tolls later in the week have sadly and painfully revealed. But as we saw in the historic wildfires last year and again during the ice storm and prolonged blackout of February, the onslaught of nature revealed countless acts of kindness and compassion as neighbors and friends pulled together to endure the relentless heat. The generosity started at the Canby Center on Friday as volunteers handed out a truck full of ice cream by the quart donated by Winco. You know, some people don't believe in miracles, Canby Center Director Ray Keene said, but I totally do. Danielle Adamson shared how a nearby resident swung to their rescue on Saturday, even though, fortunately, it was a false alarm. We had a sprinkler going to help keep our AC unit cool, she said. Our neighbor heard a weird sound and thought he saw smoke. He ran to our house and pounded on the door to let us know about the sound and smoke. Good thing it was only mist from the sprinkler that he couldn't see from his backyard. Better to be safe than sorry. Many Canby area residents reported acts of kindness toward mail carriers and food and package delivery drivers, many of whom did not have the option of waiting out the heat in the comfort of an air-conditioned home. Samantha Lynn said she and her kids put out water for the local postal worker, while Cynthia Barker went one step further. I have a sign on my mailbox that says, knock for ice water in a water bottle if I don't see them myself, Barker said. Daryl and Amy Lenhart, owners of the Whiskey Hill store, which they are remodeling in Hubbard near 91 School, offered ice cold water to any passersby that needed it and are certainly willing and eager to do the same for their mail carrier, Mary Franck. But Franck had her own ideas of how best to cool down. I found our mail lady soaking herself in our sprinkler, Amy Lenhart said with a huge laugh. She was set with ice packs and drinks, but thought the water would be an added cool down. Tim Toma shouted out James Heckathorne, head of the field crew for Canby Rebel softball team, who quickly rigged up misters for Maddie Higgins Memorial Tournament at Maple Street Park last weekend. It was a huge lifesaver, Toma said. James is a blessing to our program and community. Tiffany Winslow Taylor told the story of her 17-year-old son, who may have actually saved the life of a woman who began exhibiting symptoms of heat stroke at Milo MacGyver State Park in Estacada. She was seizing, vomiting, and in and out of consciousness, Taylor said. He helped get cold water bottles under her armpits, chest, and back, along with cold towels. And he helped redirect the first responders to the correct location when the first caller hadn't been able to give the accurate address. Proud of my kid. Stay hydrated. The Clackamas County Board of Commissioners on Thursday voted unanimously to ban all fireworks, including ones normally legal in the state, through July 10th due to extreme temperatures and other conditions that may have turned the area into a tinderbox. The move joined similar actions by cities throughout Oregon, including Portland, Bend, Gresham, and Eugene, and calls by many fire agencies and local officials calling on citizens to celebrate Independence Day in other ways on this unusually dry 4th of July. In a statement following Wednesday's vote, Clackamas County Chair Tootie Smith said residents are still recovering from the fires that ravaged the area last Labor Day. "We've already had one fire that evacuated homes in May," she said. "We cannot have another. The dry conditions and limited water supply put Clackamas County at great risk for devastating wildfires, and any spark has the potential to destroy our community." Smith said leaders must do everything in our normal course of business and in emergencies to protect our community from threats. "That is why we placed a ban on fireworks this 4th of July," she said. "We appreciate the community's understanding, cooperation, and sacrifice as we work together to protect the place we call home." The ban gives the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office authority to issue fines of up to $500 for setting off legal fireworks and $2,500 for illegal fireworks while the prohibition is in effect. Officials urge residents not to call 911 to report the use of fireworks. "Please reserve 911 for medical emergencies, fires, or if active damage is being done to your property." The ban applies only to unincorporated areas of Clackamas County. City leaders must enact their own ban to prohibit legal fireworks within the city limits. Fire districts do not have the authority to enact such a ban, but Canby Fire is among the first agencies on Monday to begin urging residents to refrain from firework displays. Canby said in a press release Wednesday that while officials will not be following the lead of larger cities in prohibiting fireworks, they urge citizens and visitors to exercise extreme caution in their Independence Day celebrations. The city also reminded residents that the use of illegal fireworks could result in a citation or even criminal prosecution. "I want everyone to have a happy holiday weekend. However, it is imperative that we are smart about how we celebrate," Mayor Brian Hodson said in a press release. "We must all prioritize safety and caution in relation to fireworks." Now Hear This Sports is brought to you by Reif & Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. It's official! The state's number one ranked offensive lineman, current class of 2022 Canby High School senior Jacob Strand, will continue his football career at Oregon State University. Obligatory go Beavers. The 6'5", 270-pound star tackle for the Cougs netted a scholarship offer from the premier Division I program almost a month ago following a private workout, but just announced his decision this week on Twitter. "First things first, I want to thank God for blessing me with this opportunity," Strand said. "I'd like to thank my parents for pushing me every day to be the best man on and off the field. Thank you to all the coaches who have taught me in the past." Really happy for Jacob, Canby head football coach Jimmy Joyce said. "He is a tremendous student athlete and a great young man, a true ambassador for Canby High School and our football team." Joyce said he saw the tremendous potential in Strand as a sophomore, which was his first year at the helm of the Cougars, and his athleticism and ability were on full display even during the shortened football season this spring. Strand, who is the number one offensive lineman in the state by Prep Red Zone Oregon earlier this year and has ranked highly in other outlets, will play his final season in Canby this fall. "We are just happy that he has another year under the lights of the Cougar Stadium," Joyce said. "It should be a fun time for Jacob, his teammates, and the school." The NCAA lifted all COVID-19 recruiting restrictions on June 1st, and Oregon State was just one of the many schools to quickly take advantage. That Strand was one of the very first prospects the Beavs invited out showed how highly they thought of the Canby recruit. "I was in shock when I got the offer. Truly life-changing," Strand told the Canby Current in an earlier interview. "I was hoping all day that the time would come, and when it did, I was at a loss for words. My coach told me one day that I'd have the possibility to play football in college. That statement has been the biggest motivation pushing me through all the hard times." Strand joins a stellar recruiting class of Oregon State, which already includes 247 Sports four-star center Dylan Lopez and a pair of three-star quarterbacks, Carlos Max and Skylar Thomas.
Hey James, what's going on with the internet? The Wi-Fi is all spotty.
Well, is it your internet or the Wi-Fi?
What are you talking about? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, kind of, but no. You see, your home or office accesses the internet through underground fiber cables from DirectLink. It's actually your Wi-Fi router that converts that internet connection into an over-the-air signal for all your wireless devices.
Okay, you lost me at kind of?
Why don't we even try? Look, you have seen like a box-looking device around the studio here. It's probably hidden under, it's under a thick layer of dust.
No, I don't. Oh, wait, is it that blinky flashy thing behind the stack of old pizza boxes?
Yeah, yes, it's the blinky flashy thing. That's the Wi-Fi equipment that connects your iPad, your PlayStation, and the laptop to the internet.
I bought that off Craigslist like 8 years ago.
Frankie, I think we just found your problem. Your Wi-Fi equipment is ancient. Electronics, they get old fast. And even when new software updates or faster broadband comes out, your old router just can't keep up. It's like expecting a Model T to outpace those new F-150 Lightnings.
Great. So now I have to make Tyler go buy, I have to go buy a whole new Wi-Fi setup. How does he, I even know what to get?
Look, I'm going to make it simple. Just call DirectLink, man. Their professional-grade Wi-Fi equipment is super affordable, and they'll manage the updates and the network security for you. They'll even help you install your new router in the perfect spot to get the strongest possible signal. You can visit directlink.coop/Wi-Fi to get started.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to make Tyler call DirectLink today. All right, well, joining us again on the Now Hear This Can Be podcast is Todd Gary, formerly longtime with Can Be Fire. He's a long-serving board member for the Malala Fire District. And Todd, you just can't get this retirement thing right, can you?
I really suck at retirement. I'm just not good at it.
Your new position is the interim chief for the Colton Fire District?
Yep, I'm interim fire chief for Colton Fire District.
Okay, tell us how that came about.
Really, it came about with a phone call.
Yeah.
I wasn't searching out another job.
Okay.
I definitely wasn't. I got a call from Chief Bo, which was a longtime chief here, and he goes, I want to retire. Mm-hmm. And he goes, your name keeps coming up in meetings and talks with other chiefs and stuff.
And you didn't I want to retire.
Yeah. Your name keeps coming up. And he goes, I was literally driving down my driveway in the motorhome to go on vacation for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I said, Chief Bo, I said, how about we talk about this when I get back? Mm-hmm. And yes, I am interested.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how that came about.
Yeah. Yeah. We were chatting a little bit before we started recording, and you just were telling me a little bit about the community and how much Colton appeals to you. Tell us more about that.
You know, I live out here. Yeah. I live real close, right on the edge of the district, and you know, it reminds me how Canby was 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great close-knit community. The guys I get to work with at Colton Fire are awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't met anybody that isn't in here to take care of this community.
It's an almost entirely volunteer, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. And they do an amazing job. They cover an amazing amount of time, and it's really great to work with people like that. And then a community that's really supportive. It's the Canby community is so supportive, and that's where I come from. And it was kind of almost a little bit, gosh, is this community going to be as supportive as Canby? And wow, they are. They really support what we're doing
here. You drive down here, and I know, or at least I believe that a lot of this is held over from last year's wildfires. But you drive down the streets, and there's still signs that are like, "We love Colton, support Colton Fire." Did that predate the wildfires, or is that just still here from the fire?
That's still some from the fires, but we talked to people, and we had an open house today, a wildland open house, and I was talking to people, and people go, what can we do for you?
Yeah.
You know, and that was what a lot of people said, and I talked to him about that, and I said, you know what you can do for us? You can do defendable space around your home. Mm. It's not that you can buy us anything or bring us anything. You can help us.
Yeah.
We can help. You can help us help you.
Yeah.
So we had those conversations, and it was great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to hear more about that, about the wildfire prevention and, coming into this summer. But first, a lot of times interim chiefs or interim city administrator, whatever, interim executive leaders for different districts, they sort of come in with a specific role in mind, maybe a specific time frame. I don't know if you have that. But did you have sort of specific marching orders for where you want to bring the district or kind of what your job is in this interim period, or they just needed a person?
Yeah, so they needed a chief.
Yeah.
And no, I don't have any agenda and I don't have any marching orders.
Yeah.
Like I told them in my interview, I see things that we can change and we can make better and we can make more efficient. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm doing. I'm listening to a lot of people. I'm getting the opportunity to sit down with every volunteer here and talk with them. And let's see how we can be. I want Colton to be the premier volunteer fire department. Mm. Premier. I want him to be the best.
Yeah.
And we can be that here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think we got a few things to work on and a few things to do. But we're moving down that road. And there's no marching orders at all. I do have a 6-month contract.
Okay.
But with that 6-month contract, the reason we did that, if I'm not happy here in 6 months and the board's not happy, it's really easy.
Yeah.
But with the intentions, and my intentions are extending that.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. You probably have a few ideas from your long service with Canby Fire or Malala Fire, things that you've picked up in that time that you're like, we could do this here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a little bit, my view is a little bit unique because I was a volunteer for a long time.
Right.
And then I was a career person starting from firefighter and moving up to division chief where I retired as. So I've got that knowledge, and I work for a great chief. Yeah. I mean, Chief Davis is a great chief, and I've learned so much from him. And Chief Coons was a great chief that I was able to work with. So I've gleaned a lot from them. Mm-hmm. And also the perspective of being a board member and looking at the budget and looking from a different angle at the budget than an operations side.
Yeah.
So I think I'm a little unique when it comes to that, I have those three things together. I was a career person, I was a volunteer, and I'm on a board.
Yeah.
So I hopefully that will help me in working here as a chief.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you picked a heck of a time to come to come back into the game. Obviously, just overall in general, even before this crazy heat that we just had, I know a lot of fire officials were concerned about the wildfire danger this summer. Obviously, record-breaking temperatures for 3 straight days didn't help that. There's a lot of concern around fireworks. Some places it's banned. Some places it's just strongly discouraged.
Right.
There's confusion. And so that's just overall. And then here in Colton, like we said, that the Riverside Fire was like right over there.
Yeah.
So in approaching your job and in approaching the information that you've been putting out in the open house, just kind of tell us the messaging that you're trying to put out there and how that kind of coalesces into your thinking about what the next couple of weeks might look like and what we can do to make it easier on you.
So I think one of the things we're really concerned with is fuel moistures.
Okay.
And we're concerned with these bigger fuel moistures, these 100-hour and these 1,000-hour fuels, which are logs up to about 8-inch.
Okay. And, that, and those hours, that's how long they burn or smolder?
Yeah,
or?
There's stuff that goes along with that. But but we're concerned about those because we're seeing moistures in those things that are the same as we see the end of August.
Okay.
And we're seeing that right now.
Okay.
And those are the things that we get a big fire and it starts consuming those big ones. Because light flashy fires going through the grass, we can usually take care of some of that.
Okay.
And the humidity has so much effect on that.
Okay.
Compared to the big stuff. The big stuff, the humidity doesn't affect as much.
Yeah.
And when it's dry, it's dry.
Yeah.
So that's what the fire chiefs are all very, very concerned about.
Yeah.
Are those pieces.
Yeah, yeah. That is so interesting, and I really appreciate you sharing that because I think a lot of times the general public has no understanding of, there are times, obviously, now it's not one of those, but there are times where it's like, it hasn't been super crazy hot. It hasn't been super crazy, fire officials are like, oh my gosh, we're one of the most dangerous places we've ever been, and there's sort of a disconnect there, so.
Yeah. I walked through, I went up on Elwood, and the fire came through
right
through the Elwood area, And I walked out in one of the groves, the tree groves out there, and there's ferns. There's ferns 3-4 feet tall, and they're green. Yeah. Everything looks green. But you walk through there, and the fire came through there so fast it didn't consume everything. Wow. And it's like walking through the woods in the middle of summer, crack, crack, crack. Everything is super dry down below those ferns.
Right.
So that's what we're concerned about. We can see lots of green out there, and that is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, those are our light, flashy fuels. We're really concerned about those heavier fuels.
Sure, sure. Okay, so what can we do? Colton, I believe, is also one of those ones that just, you know, discouraging fireworks, not doing the ban.
No, we are banned.
Okay, they're banned.
So the fireworks are banned in Colton.
Okay.
We're completely unincorporated.
Our whole district is
unincorporated.
That's true. Okay, yeah. Okay, there you go.
So, yeah. No fireworks there. Don't bring your kids over here with their sparklers, okay? Keep them in Camby.
Okay. Well, okay? We're just going to be in your backyard.
Yeah.
I thought that's what the invitation was, but.
Yeah. No, we're gonna keep the sparklers in Camby, not in Colton.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So
what else can we do besides listening to that band?
Yeah. clean up around your home.
Yeah.
You know, clean your gutters. Mm-hmm. Gutters are one of the big causes of fires because we get the embers on the roof. The embers roll off. We've got this nice dry stuff in our gutter because we haven't cleaned up. That stuff catches on fire, catches your roof on fire. Mm. So clean your gutters, clean up around your home. Give us a defendable space. Give the firefighters a chance to save your home. Mm. We need that defendable space to be able to save your home. So do that. And the other thing, and everybody I know in Camby has heard me say this, and it's for home escape, it's for everything. Have a plan. Mm. Have a plan. Have a plan for evacuation. When we get to level one, have that plan that, okay, we're at level one. I need to get those things out of the house that are really important, those heirlooms, those pieces that, you know, the families had for centuries. Those need to come out, and those need to go in your car when we get to level one. We don't want to wait till level three and we're running through the house and then we forget one of those.
Yeah.
Level one, get that stuff to your car. When we get to level two, start thinking about leaving. If you have a plan and you know where you're going to go and you've made arrangements, let's start going there.
Yeah.
Because if you remember back in September, the traffic and the traffic jams, when we get to level three, everybody's trying to get out.
Right.
So if we'd leave a little earlier and maybe during that level two time, just to be cautious, it's a good time to really think about that and get going.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is, it's not up on our website yet, but on the Colton Fire website, we're going to have wildfire evacuation checklists.
Okay.
And those are just things to kind of trigger your mind.
Yeah.
And you can go through that now and go, oh, I never thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go through all those things so you can have an idea of what you're going to take or what you need to take, or moving that patio furniture off your patio that you would have never thought of. That, let's just throw that out in the yard, and that's a good place for it.
Yeah.
Get it off the deck and get it out on the yard. Get it away from the home.
Yeah.
And those are things that you can do when we get to level one, and we can be ready,
ready
to go. And that checklist will help you through that.
Yeah.
And also get signed up for the public alerts.
Mm.
If you're not signed up, go to Clackamas County Emergency Management, look at the website, and sign up for those public alerts.
Nice.
That's where you're going to get your level one, two, and three. Mm-hmm. This morning, an alert was sent out because Molala's phone system went down.
Right.
They couldn't call 911. Yeah. It came out on those alerts.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, let's make sure you have those alerts. It's an easy way. And those actually follow you, too. If you go to the coast and you're worried about a tsunami and you have a tsunami alert, it's time to come back home at that point.
Right.
You know, let's get to higher ground. Let's leave that.
Yes.
So all those are good things. The other thing that, you know, that people are really concerned with right now is PG shutting your power off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those public safety power outages.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been a lot of talk.
Yeah.
Understanding there is a map on the PGE website that talks about their biggest wildland areas.
Yeah.
And also with that, there's also another checklist, and I will put that checklist on. And just understand, if they shut the power off, we'll probably be out for about 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
It's not turn on and turn off
thing. Yeah.
They have to then inspect all those lines.
Mm.
And they're going to only do this at a certain wind speed and temperature and humidity.
Right.
They're putting all those things together to see when they need to shut off.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point, because if they have the power off and wind does knock a tree down, they're not going to know without visually, because no one's going to be calling and saying, hey, my power's out.
Exactly.
So they can't turn that back on when the line might potentially be down.
So, yep. They have to go through and inspect all those.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. When you're talking about the checklist and the being ready, it was reminding me of last year, and we ended up being in a, at one point we were level 3 and we left, but when we were still on the level 1, level 2, we were having our kids help pack, and we were like, pick one toy.
Yeah.
Just in case we're trying, obviously they're scared. They have no idea what's going on. So we're trying to be real comforting about it, but also wanting them to have stuff if the worst did happen,
Right.
I guess he was 4 at the time, just really didn't understand. He took all of his toys and hid them under his bed
because
he thought we were going to burn the rest of his toys.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He thought we were doing a purge type situation.
Time for the toys to go.
Yeah. Hopefully he's 1 year older. Hopefully he'll get it at this point. I wanted to ask maybe if there's a hopeful note we could end this on, right? I know there's a lot of concern about the wildfire season coming up, and obviously this going into this weekend even. Are there lessons you feel that our state learned, that the local fire districts learn in terms of prevention or early response, and our communities as well, that might that you feel might translate into hopefully some better outcomes this year? If obviously sometimes things are just too big. I mean, there's just nothing you could do. But
yeah, so I think what we've learned is we're all still very concerned.
Yeah,
and the public is, very on point, and that's great.
That's good.
We're gonna get stuff. Early on, we're gonna find out about these fires. Yeah, we do have the buy-in. The other thing that we've learned is, We need more equipment. We need to do things. Colton Fire, we've brought up another brush rig this year.
Mm.
So we've got a third brush rig this year. We've also, with that third brush rig, we've changed, and Canby has done the same thing, changed some of what we call run cards on how much equipment we're going to get at one time. When we're in extreme, we're going to get all kinds of stuff. We got everything coming.
Yeah.
So we've learned that we need that. We need that quick attack. We need to be there quickly. We need to get on these fires quick.
Yeah.
Especially around our homes and around our neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And Colton and Canby are doing pretty much the exact same thing.
Yeah.
But we're really gearing up to do that.
Yeah. And I know this was already a big thing even before the wildfires and COVID and everything, but interagency communication, do you feel like that's even tighter?
Oh, I think it's so tight.
Yeah.
And it's, we're all working.
And not just because you've worked for all 20 fire districts in the state.
Hey, I've only worked for one other one. Come on now. Give me a break. Yeah. We're really working together.
Yeah.
Working together. And Oregon Department of Forestry has brought a lot more equipment up.
Yeah.
We have access to a helicopter.
Yeah.
If I have a big fire today and I think I need a helicopter,
yeah,
with the help of ODF, I can have that helicopter. It's available right here between the San Yam District and the Molalla District. It's available.
Yeah.
Two dozers. I looked at the report this morning. They got two dozers available.
Yeah.
One of them sitting right in Molalla.
Yeah.
I got six. They got six engines and a water tender.
Yeah.
And those are all up and available. They're not assigned to anything.
Mm.
So I think there's a lot more equipment that's at the ready.
Yeah.
And I think as firefighters, we're a lot more ready. We've done a lot more training, because who would have thought?
Yeah.
You always think we're going to Central Oregon and we're going here for fires, for the evacuations, and California, we've been all over the place.
Right.
Who would have thought it's our own backyard?
Yeah.
Or let alone right in our front yard.
Yeah.
I mean, it was here. So I think we're ready.
Yeah.
We're a lot more ready than we have.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a good place to end, is just, as you say, and even right now, we've got a few Canby firefighters down in Southern Oregon.
We do.
There was a task force from Clackamas County that went out just kind of to be ready. There wasn't even a huge fire right there, but
right,
just to jump on things when they did start. But that's happened for years and whatnot, and we did see when we had issues, we had people even as far as Mexico coming out to help us, and just that is really cool, really heartwarming from as a member of the public to see that goodwill that we built for so long, being repaid and then being ready to jump to help us when we need it.
So. Yeah, and the great thing, Clackamas County, our chiefs work so well together.
Yeah.
we all will sit down and talk about things. We're more than willing to send equipment to other districts to help each other. So it's really, Clackamas County as a whole is really a great team.
So, for folks in the Colton Fire District, your website, you mentioned you're going to have some information up there. Just shout out, if you would, where folks can sign up to get the information they need.
Oh, it's on the bottom of this. ColtonFireDistrict.org.
Okay.
The equipment will be on there. There's not... I'm putting a button on there that says wildfire information. It's okay. Not there yet.
Okay.
But it will be.
Don't click on that.
It will be shortly.
Don't look for that. Unless so, it is there, and then yeah, do look for
when
it.
When it's there, punch on it. If it's not there, just ignore everything.
All right. Well, thank you, Chief. Congrats Absolutely. On the new position. Thanks for your continued service to our area, and thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was gonna go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we are out here at Marquee Hope Village with Marcy Birch. She's the assisted living administrator at the facility here. Hi, Marcy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Why don't you start by telling us just a little bit about what's going on out here? What is all this craziness?
Well, you know, we decided with all the heat going on that our residents needed something fun to do.
Yeah.
So we made a beach day.
Yeah.
The activity department's been putting this on for a couple days, and we've got a slip and slide out here. We've had probably 20 folks go on it so far.
It's unbelievable. So people just probably hear the word slip and slide and assisted living and are like, what are they doing? So why don't you explain the very... carefully orchestrated slip and slide that we've got going on here.
Yeah, for sure. So we have a tarp laid down. It's got soap, it's got water, so it's pretty slick.
It's about and 30 then, feet?
Yep, yeah. I would say.
Yeah.
And then we've got a giant blow-up, very patriotic duck.
Yes.
And then it's got some straps on the sides, and we've got therapy crew here helping people in and off of the duck safely.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we've got a team running them up and down the slide. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're all in their normal clothes and whatnot. Yep. It's not a very wet or anything, but it is fun. They seem to be having a really good time with it.
Yes, yes. We're not getting too wet out here, but they're having fun, getting a little wind in their hair.
Yes, yes. I think the therapy assistants who are doing it are getting maybe a little more exercise than they realized or than they bargained for.
Yeah, they're looking a little tired, but they're doing a great job getting the residents up and down. And I think the bigger the smile, the faster they go. So.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously this was prompted by the heat, but somebody mentioned earlier, this is kind of your first major-ish event.
Yeah.
Since COVID.
We've been separated by so many things and had so many limitations. It's so nice to see folks get together and smile and laugh and have a good time and just kind of relax and have fun like we used to.
Yeah. So, What does the impact seem to be that you see on the residents? I mean, I'm out here. I see a lot of smiles. A lot of folks seem to be having fun, but I don't see them every day. So
yeah, I would say. I mean, just the shift in the building since we've been able to kind of bring back, you know, dining room and family visits. It's been a huge shift in the atmosphere in the building. Mm. So it's been so fun to see with smiles and laughs, and it's just been really awesome to see their overall well-being improve.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, absolutely. And you've got another very large event that is open to the public that's coming back this year, later this month.
Yeah, we're very excited to bring back our car show. We didn't do it last year, obviously. So this year is going to be a lot of fun. We have... we're going to try to make it bigger and better every year. So this year we've got a couple food trucks coming. And then we've got live music that was sponsored by Direct Link.
Awesome.
We've got Brady Gosp coming to play.
Oh,
he
cool.
played 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And everybody really loved him. So
yeah.
we've got some fun stuff set up with that. And we've got cars coming in being registered left and right. So we're really excited. It's going to be a fun time. We've got some stuff to do for the kids. So it's definitely going to be a family event.
Nice.
Bring your family out and have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. How many cars do you think you'll have?
I think we've probably got 20 registered right now,
okay.
but they're still coming in.
Yeah.
We've got a couple different car clubs that are thinking about coming. So
cool.
It'll just kind of depend on
if
they can make it or not.
And,
yeah.
Sometimes they got to check the weather. And
Make
sure it's
nobody's coming out in the rain.
Safe for their precious babies. awesome. So that's going to be when?
That is going to be Thursday, July 15th from 4 to 7 out here by the facility.
Awesome. Awesome. The residents, I'm sure, are big fans of classic cars, are
oh,
they?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. We've got, we'll take all the residents out. It's kind of our way of bringing car shows to them. A lot of them can't get out as easy as they used to. So, but, you know. We've got one gentleman here that had a 1915 Ford.
Yeah.
And so he likes to come out and look and see what the differences are. And it's just really cool to kind of talk about those stories with them about, you know, the cars when they were
back.
Younger.
I used to have one of these.
That looks familiar.
Marcy, would you be able to talk a little bit for events like this and the car show about, you know, obviously, like, folks that maybe aren't in the industry think, oh, it's just fun or whatnot, but my understanding is it's really important to the overall care, right? It's kind of part of the care strategy for residents to have these experiences. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Events like these, I mean, this is something like one of the residents was just talking about. It says, we're going to be talking about this for weeks kind of thing. It's just kind of some sort of, it's joy to bring to them. And then we bring it here because it's not as easy as, because, you know, like you and I would go out and find it somewhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't always come to us. You just go out and do it. But bringing it here and bringing those experiences and things that they can share with the community and their families can come in and have those experiences too in those conversations. And it just really helps with the overall well-being.
Yeah.
Just things to look forward to.
Tell us about how the residents are doing overall. You mentioned since the vaccine and things were able to come back, the morale has been a lot better.
Definitely. You could see, you could feel, you know, a lightness in the building when things shift. You know, we all got vaccinated pretty early, and then the rules kind of lightened up where families could come visit, and that's really where I saw a pivot. You know, just from people kind of staying in the rooms a lot, and just, you know, everybody's nervous about it, and just kind of living again, getting back to life, and it was really awesome to see. And we just kind of continue opening things up and in little steps, so it's nice.
Morale is very important, right? Long-term care, feeling positive and hopeful versus feeling negative and pessimistic can have a huge impact on just people's outcomes, right?
Definitely. And the social isolation too is, you know, everybody was trying to keep to themselves, and now just to kind of see everybody chat a little bit more, everybody's a little brighter, and they're a little more talkative and engaged.
It's so much easier, right, for younger people, or some of us, I guess, to go to digital, right, than older folks. I mean, that's something that kind of people might not think about or realize, but like, oh, that would be, you know, a lot harder, or maybe impossible for some people to just do their normal visits for, you know, on a screen.
Sure.
Which, you know, we do the meetings and, you know, kind of transition to that relatively easy, but for older population, not as easy.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
It was definitely a learning curve. A lot of the families were on board, you know, they kind of get their things set up too, and some technical difficulties on that end and on this end.
Yeah.
just trying to learn an iPad, and why can't, you know, you just kind of want to touch and feel and be around, and it's just kind of a different experience that they're not used to. But it definitely helped. We did a lot of virtual visits and a lot of virtual appointments with providers and things like that to keep keep everybody in touch and in the loop. But it's never beats the real thing when you see that family in person.
Awesome. Cool. You know, I really appreciate you guys having us out here. It's really great to be able to get photos, kind of show the community what's going on here, because I'm sure you know how invested the community is in these and what you do, and especially with the residents, and you know, wanting and wishing and, you know, hoping for the best. Are there other ways that the community, now that things have opened up a little bit and things are different than maybe, you know, the needs during the COVID times, are there ways that the community can support, other than obviously coming out to the car show on July 15th?
Yeah, I would just kind of say that's the main way right now, is to show up and be present and interact with our seniors and kind of just share different experiences. One of the things that some of the seniors are most excited for at the car show is there's going to be we have different booths and vendors of local vendors coming. And one of them is they're going to do a fundraiser for the local soccer team.
Oh, cool.
So there's going to be kids and things, you know, maybe kicking a soccer ball around, that kind of thing, to watch and enjoy those things that they don't normally, haven't been anyway, able to get out and see. So just being here, I think, is huge for them.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm really excited about the kids versus senior soccer game that you guys are going to do. No, I'm just kidding.
That's a great idea. We haven't quite planned that one out yet.
Okay, we'll see. All right, Marcy, anything else you want to tell folks about?
No, just thank you for coming out and getting the pictures. And I know I had one resident earlier tell me, like, you have to get me that picture. My daughter's never going to believe I was on a slip and slide today.
Yeah,
so
I love it.
I think that just means the world to them.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I know you're just itching to get on the slip and slide yourself. So I will let you go and jump on there. Thank you, Marcy.
Thank you.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't, like, animal-related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest-running, locally-owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately, like, caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.